Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome in. It is Ball Ball, and we're coming off an unbelievable national championship game. The kind of game that I still kind of don't know what happened, right? Where you don't know what hits you. No, you don't. That thing gets out of control in such a way. So here's what I want to do. I'm going to bring Pierce Caputo back on. He's the new head coach for Washington. Get his thoughts. He coached against both these teams. He saw the run against. So without further ado, recap national championship. Give him some coaching philosophies. He's the new head coach of George Washington, Pierce Caputo. Well, I would say we've never seen that before from Kansas last night. But then the gentleman who joins me right now saw it from Kansas. First, let me get to last night. Okay. What did you think of the first half?
Yeah. I mean, and I gotta be honest, Doug, I was watching and returning texts to people at the same time. So when Kansas jumps out, I started to feel like, okay, they're in control and they're playing, you know, what I thought might happen. And then, you know, to Carolina's, I mean, the guards for Carolina have been so, Baycott's been like the consistent one, obviously, but I think what's gotten Carolina to the point where they were so good at the end of the year is the consistency of guard play. As the season wore on, they were making big plays, big shots off the dribble, you know, a lot of freedom that Hubert, I think to his credit, gave those guys to go make plays with the ball. And they were, you know, they're both skillful guys. They can make shots off the dribble, et cetera. So you start to see some of that with Baycott just coming back into the game, I think, in the first half after a foul and just being somewhat dominant. And I'm thinking to myself, geez, I mean, this is like their best performance at the right time, you know, even though they've been playing well, you know.
And Kansas to the other side, that first half is what it looked like against Kentucky, where they weren't rebounding, they're getting beasted on the boards, and then they weren't getting back defensively. And then they just started forcing. Yeah. They felt like they all got sped up offensively. I mean, Christian Braun's driving into traffic. Yeah. Jalen Wilson's driving into traffic. And they just look completely discombobulated. And here's the similarity to the Kentucky game. I got a chance to call it on radio. Was at the end of the first half, and I don't know if he was, I don't know if he was just trying to figure out who could play and who couldn't, or just trying to just take everybody out. But he had like Jalen Kuma. He went emptied his bench kind of.
He was trying. Yeah, he was trying. He was looking.
He was just like pushing buttons a little bit.
And I thought Carolina was playing, and I think Hubert said it. Carolina was playing extremely hard too.
Yeah.
When they got down, whatever it was, how many. They all of a sudden they turned it up a notch defensively and physically. Yeah.
Okay. So what did you see? Obviously there's an energy change, but what did you see schematically change? What do you think Bill did adjustment wise in the second? What did you notice differently?
Yeah. You know, I'll preface this by saying, again, I was texting a lot during this time, you know, as you can imagine, but one thing that stood out is Charles said at halftime about them going to McCormick. And like, that wasn't it. That wasn't the answer. Right. And so not so much in their, I thought their defense obviously picked it up and they were able to get some things in transition. They made a couple of threes that were critical to, you know, cut the lead. But I thought late in the game, I felt really happy for David McCormick because I think they kept going to him. And obviously the huge bucket late in the game, you know, after he missed it and got it back and his confidence level to go, I think he may have missed and rebounded it.
Yes.
Or yes. They kicked it out and went back to him. Yeah. And then his confidence level to go back to the hook. Like, I'm like, damn, like good for him. Cause I think most guys would have said, oh, I got it back. Let me throw that, spray that back out and get a three.
That game had some stuff I'd never seen before. Right. Like Puff throws up on the court. I guess
he was good.
But he was good. And then all of a sudden he got hit in the stomach and he like lost his wind. Yes. He throws up on the court.
Yeah.
And then the crazy play where Kansas is up three, they throw the ball in to DeJuan, their point guard, who steps out of bounds, not once, but twice. I've never seen that. I've never seen that ever.
Especially it was side out. Right?
It was a deep side angle. Out. Yeah. I've been to a bunch of Bill's practices and a bunch of Bill's shootarounds. And one of the things he does is shootarounds. They're very quick in what they do, but he makes them practice what he calls odd angle inbounds, you know, just like different spots. So they know what they're doing. Right. And to have a kid, and it's only his second year playing it, but to step out of bounds, like your point guard step out of bounds twice when you throw the ball into him.
I don't see how he couldn't have given the angle and the way where he winds up catching it. It was like, yeah, it's, by the way, he put in the cyclone play. Did you see that? You know, everyone calls it cyclone or whatever, like the old the Warriors ran it. Fred Hoiberg ran it, I think, at Iowa State, where you kind of like enter it to the wing and then it's your big is up high and you set like a double back screen, back screen.
OK, so
I didn't see that in scouting
power. No. That wasn't. Yeah, that's an Arizona play. I thought that. Okay, Joe Pasternak claims that that's his play that he had with Sean in Arizona and everybody copied. I don't know. Power of the power five. But yes,
yeah, people call it cyclone. Yeah. Yeah. And I hadn't seen that all, you know, I mean, not all year because it's not like I watched them all year, but certainly in the tournament and the, you know, when we scouted them, I never saw it. And I think McCormick got it blocked but I'm watching it late in the game and I'm like, oh, he put it in for the game. Like, damn, good for him.
Yeah.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant... Just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You've been on that other sideline, granted, as an assistant coach, but what's that like when all of a sudden the momentum switches? Like, it did feel like Hubert, I felt like he was a little slow to react and call a timeout and try and slow that thing down. But you've been there, right? You guys, it was 47-15, and it was McCormick show for the, he only played 5 minutes in the second half against you guys. What is that like in terms of you sitting there wanting to grab Coach Allen? You know, and you can't, what's that like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you know, people talk a lot of times about adjustments and, you know, the problem is usually what leads up to that is what? Turnovers.
Yeah.
and missed shots. Like we had, if you go back to our game, probably five open threes, Doug, like somewhat open. Some very open, where like the way to stop the bleeding was to just make one or two of them, you know, to keep it like, okay, look, we don't have the lead anymore. Maybe they're up two. Like at one point, I think we were up two and we had like two open threes in a row. Then they took the lead and they go up 49-42. And we've got, I won't name names because I love my guys. So I'm not like trying to call them out, but they had, we had a wide open one that would have gone like 49-45. Now it's a two possession game. The problem is when you miss those shots, right? And you start pressing in terms of like, okay, maybe I'll drive the next one. Yeah. And then they turn you over because they're playing hard. And that's kind of for us. We're up six with the ball to start the half. We're one of the best teams in the country and not turning the ball over. And, we turn it over, they get a run out. And I think in Kansas's case, they're so devastating in transition, as you know, that if you make one of those mistakes or there's a long rebound off a miss or, as, you know, the other one is as a point guard, you know, anytime, I always say anytime little guys are at the rim and the ball doesn't go in.
Yeah, nobody's back.
It's, you know, it's a layup, right? So it's hard to stop the bleeding, I think. You know, you try to call timeouts, you maybe try to change your defense. Maybe you try to put the ball inside to sort of slow the game down a little bit. But, you know, there's a reason why the guy's won, you know, 95% of his games or something. Like, he's a really good coach.
Okay. You know? So now you have your first head job, right? Now you're calling the timeouts, right? Now you're making those calls. Yeah. What's interesting about Hubert is, and you know it from being in the league this long, is they didn't run any of the Carolina stuff. That's not,
not much, no, right, at all.
Right?
Yeah. I give him credit. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right? So, I mean, if you go back to when Roy was there, I could have told you everything they're running, right? You go to box set, they're going to their shuffle series, right? We, everybody knows all their secondaries. Trap out of the first time out, either run the dribbler, you know, it's the same stuff. So it's one thing to be a different voice and a different face and to not having coached before. It's not other than to go like, hey, we're going to do a different way. That's really okay. So how much of what you're going to do is what you want to do, and how much of it is what Coach Allen is?
Look, I think you got to be yourself. So that's the first thing. I think the, as we talked about probably before, like, you know, there's things that are not going to change, right? But there might be things based on your personnel that would change. There's things that you feel very comfortable teaching. I think it's always better as a coach, right? If sometimes the scheme might be better, but if you're not as comfortable teaching it, it's not going to be as good as something that you're comfortable teaching. The guys will absorb it better. And, you know, in Hubert's case, I mean, he just deserves so much credit for not changing for the sake of changing, right? Because that's not right. But it's very difficult. It takes a lot of confidence and a lot of know-how. And his staff deserves a lot of support. The players deserve a lot of credit for being able to say, hey, we're going to tweak some things here that, you know, looking at our personnel, maybe we feel like is better for us. And then when they were not, I would say not winning, but early in, I mean, we beat them by 27.
I know.
And then I think Wake got them pretty good right after.
Yes, smacked them.
And I remember Forbes text me because we had beat Duke, and I think he was playing Duke next, and then we beat Carolina. And he says, hey, thanks for like beating these historic programs by like in historic ways, you know, like right before I play them, you know, they appreciate that, you know? And so, I mean, he just deserves a lot of credit because again, a lot of people, especially when you lose at Miami by 27, you lose that Wake, you may think to yourself, man, did I screw this up? And to, you know, for him to have doubled down on it, I think they got better within it. It certainly fit their personnel with Manic, you know, Manic was such a key for them. So, you know, I wish I could say I'm going to be that smart to do one or the other, but I think we'll just figure it out as we go along. But it was, to your point, I'll give you, you'll appreciate this as a basketball junkie. Like what you were saying about Carolina, Coach L used to give a speech to the team and he said, hey, my last game in college was against Carolina. You know, our high school coach played for Frank McGuire at St. John's. I coached at Virginia for 7 years. Against Carolina at George Mason, you know, we played Carolina a couple of times, including the NCAA tournament. You know, now I'm at Miami for X amount of years. Like these are all the things they do. And he just would write them up and say, we know what they're going to do. Now defending them, stopping them,
a whole different deal,
you know, scoring on them. That's a whole different deal, you know, but we know what they're going to do. They're very systematic, you know?
Yeah. Take me back. You're at George Mason. What was that decision like? What was the decision like to leave? Because he didn't, people who have forgotten, it wasn't like you went to the Final Four and then he got the Miami offer and then he bolted. That wasn't the way it took place, right? He stayed. What was the decision like to leave?
Yeah, I mean, I give him a lot of credit. You know, we go back to the NCAA tournament in 2008. We lost in the championship game in 2007. In 2009, went to the NIT in 2009. 2011, I don't think people realize, our best regular season team probably in CAA history was in 2011 with, you know, Luke Hancock Ryan Pearson, who was player of the year in the league, and Cam Long was first team all league, and we beat Villanova in the first round. And so, you know, when the season, we lose to Ohio State, in the round of 32 with Sullinger and Kraft and those guys. And, you know, I give Coach a lot of credit. I mean, I just think he could have stayed at George Mason forever and he could have been Bob McKillop at George Mason, you know. And we were having a change in president. And president was a great, he's since now passed, Alan Merton, but he's an unbelievable guy and so supportive and really Coach's best friend. And I think Coach started to think about those things and always wanted to coach in the ACC, haven't been an assistant there. And for me, it was a wild time. Archie had offered me the job to go to Dayton with him. And I had really thought about it. I really believed in Arch and thought he would do a great job at Dayton. And it was back then it was quite a bit more money. But I was sort of leaning towards staying because we had a really good team coming back. And then believe it or not, the week of sort of the Miami thing, I interviewed with Coach Pitino to go to Louisville. And then I interviewed with Coach Donovan to go to Florida. And I was literally on Florida's campus when Coach Larrañaga took the Miami job. And I was driving back from Gainesville to the Orlando airport to fly to DC. My bachelor party was that weekend. Believe it or not, we were getting married in May, my wife, Julie, and I. And I remember Billy calling me and saying, "Hey, I heard Coach Larrañaga is taking Miami." I'm like, "Man, I don't really know that." And then 5 minutes later, like, Coach Larrañaga calls, says, "You know, hey, look, if I take Miami, which I've been offered, this would be your situation." And I was like, "All right, well, I have a job no matter what when I land. Where it'll be, you know, I have no idea." And you know, as it turns out, you know, I went to Miami. That was like on a Wednesday. I went to Miami that Friday and never really came back. So,
what was the program like when you guys got there?
You know, I'll give a lot of credit to Coach Haith and his staff. We had a nice core of players. Durant Scott, who wound up being the defensive player of the year. Kenny Kaji was an all-conference player. Trey McKinney Jones, who wound up having a 10-day in the NBA, who's a great guy. Julian Gamble, who had been injured all of his career. He wound up getting a sixth year for us and was a great player. He's still playing in Europe. So we had a great core of players, and I give the staff credit, you know, for that. Obviously, they had never had a winning season in the ACC, believe it or not. They'd been in the league about 8 years. They had a 500 year that made the NCAA tournament, but they had never had a winning season. And, you know, there were some things there that were, you know, like, I think needed to be improved in terms of, you know, the fan base and things like that, a little bit of apathy, what have you. But I thought Coach Haith's staff had done a good job of building the roster to the point where, you know, as we looked at it, you're like, all right, this is a team that could have a chance to make the NCAA tournament in the next year or two because they've got some pieces. And then obviously we get Shane Larkin that summer. And that changed everything.
And the Shane Larkin thing, like, he was going to DePaul, right?
Yeah, he was actually at DePaul, believe it or not. And we had recruited him at Mason. He was at DePaul and in summer school, essentially gets there. And for whatever reason, I just, you know, didn't like it. Wasn't comfortable. You know, was a little bit of homesick because he, you know, Barry and Lisa had settled in Orlando when Barry retired from playing baseball. And so, you know, I think he felt like, man, if I could go to a school in Florida that was high major, I that would be great. And now these guys that really believed and recruited me at George Mason are actually in Florida at a high major school. So, you know, we were able to, he called, and I mean, it was like Donna Shalala, our president. I mean, it was like the day before school started, we had to go to her and say, "Hey, you know, President Shalala, like, is there any chance we can get this guy in school?" And, they made it happen. And obviously the rest is history because we had a nice core and then we added the player of the year in the league.
When coaches take jobs, and you just took one,
yeah,
and you discuss admissions, okay, what are those discussions really like? Is it, hey, I'm going to need a favor, and here's what is a favor within what reason? Is it how did you handle it? How did Coach Larrañaga handle it? How do you handle that discussion with a guy? Because there's like two sides to it, right? Like, you want the job. On the other hand, you know, in the back of your mind, like, I can't win this job unless I'm getting some help here, right? Yeah. How'd you handle it? How'd Coach L handle it?
Yeah, I think every institution's different. Their way of looking at things. I thought at George Mason, we had a good way in the sense that, you know, our admissions director's philosophy was, I don't want to give you like slots, like, hey, you have exceptions per se. I want to discuss every student athlete and let's look at them and say, like, do we think they can be successful here? Do we think they can graduate? And do we think that they, you know, can do a good job, you know, academically here? And so each individual is different, right? And you evaluate those people as they come. And I think from a coach's standpoint, you try not to bring anybody to admissions that you don't feel like, hey, is serious about graduating. Because if you get to the point where you've brought a bunch of guys and they are struggling academically, you're going to lose credibility, you know, at the institutional level. So for us, like we've graduated everybody since 2006 that we've had, other than the guys who have gone pro early. So I think you build up some equity with your admissions people to say, hey, anybody they bring, you know, they've vetted in terms of their, you know, how serious their parents are about academics. You know, as you know, Doug, I mean, it's not like a lot of times when 18-year-olds come to school, they need to understand the value of all this stuff, but the support's there and everything like that. But I think the biggest thing is making sure you bring people that you believe are going to be successful at that place. And some guys can be successful here and not elsewhere, and some guys can be successful elsewhere and not here, you know?
What about you as a recruiter and evaluator, the ability to understand, hey, what an ACC player looks like,
yeah,
as opposed to what a CAA player looks like, and also factoring in mind, like, there's also tiers to the ACC. You ain't going to get the kid that Duke wants unless he's, if he's on a secondary list or Carolina, whatever.
No.
What's that process like for you at that point in time in your career?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of fear, right? You're trying to, like, you know, think to yourself, man, I'm jumping up a level here. We had a top 25 team at George Mason, but, you know, I'm going to have to really figure it out, you know, in terms of what works. And, you know, what we found is, and obviously we recruited a couple of McDonald's All-Americans at Miami, and a guy like Bruce Brown, who wasn't a McDonald's All-American, but probably should have been. He was a fifth year guy. And yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think I always felt like in the ACC, there's a one percenter list. The guys that are just, they, you know, the Jason Tatums, the Donovan Mitchell, the guys that, you know, they're going to be having their own sneakers and stuff like that someday. And there's a couple of those guys throughout 10 years that were in the league. And then I think you've got everybody else. What I found is not that far off from each other talent-wise. The seriousness of approach to becoming a really good player was the differentiator. You know, like, if you think about it, and maybe going back to your career, it was like, you know, hey, there were some guys probably in the Big 12 at that time, or, you know, like, you knew maybe guys at Kansas or whatever, but then everybody else, it was, you could figure out who was positional size, speed, athleticism, skill, what have you. Who were the guys that were serious about being really, you know, Davon Reed comes to mind, who plays for the Nuggets. He was a guy who was like, he had measurables, he had skill, he was ranked 100 or something like that, you know? So it wasn't that much different than maybe him and the guy who was ranked 50. You could kind of toss a coin. But what you could tell about Davon was seriousness of approach. Like, this is a guy who, like, wants to be a really good player. He's going to be diligent and all those things. Ultimately, you can win with that guy. And that guy goes from being number 100 to being drafted and kind of hanging in the NBA here over the last 5 years. So that was the thing for me to sort of understand. You know, I also thought the world is full of, like, going up from CAA or whatever, and then the transfer world, the world's full of 6'2" combo guards that can probably get 10 points a game at the high major level, but can't help you win, because who do they guard? If they can't play the point and they can only guard the point, and you're playing against Duke and they've got wings that are 6'6" and 6'8" and he's 6'2", who does he guard?
Yeah, no, it's, and the people, I think, I just look at box scores. I look at total points, and that does not, I actually thought, you know, like, just go back to last night, Obagi's the MVP, and I thought McCormick was great, but what Obagi did defensively was unbelievable.
Right.
Like, he was remarkable defensively. Right. And that's really hard to quantify for somebody who's not really intently watching the game. So you guys are building it. But what can be taken from, like you said, you signed McDonald's All-American at Miami.
Right.
Like, this is not, people forget Miami did not have a basketball player for like 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, non-existent. And though the facility is nice and on campus, again, it's not a college foot basketball town per se. What's the, how did you get that going? How did you get the recruiting machine going when you don't have a history, when you have fan support, but it wasn't crazy fan support, and you're in that league, which is murderer's row? How'd you get that going?
You know, it's funny, when Coach took the job, I think he thought it was a really good league. And then all of a sudden we had Louisville, Pitt, Notre Dame, and Syracuse, you're like, oh my God, like this just became a ridiculous league. I think first, as I said, you got to get a little lucky, right? You got to get off to a good start. And we had a core, and then we had Shane. And all of a sudden, what I learned is you, at the mid-major level, a lot of times it was selling what you have, our facility, our whatever, you know, our locker room and our arena. You know, when you get to the high major level, everyone is so focused on being a pro. Style of play
and how much I'm going to play.
Right, style of play and development. Like, and so we were able to tell this little development story, starting with the guys we inherited. So like Kenny Kaji goes from being, you know, doesn't really play at all, doesn't take a three, doesn't make a three in his first 2 years at Florida, to making like 60 threes for us his senior year. You know, and Shane Larkin goes from being 98 on the list to being the 18th pick in the draft. And you start to slowly build that up. And then you start to craft a little bit of like, okay, this is what our sell is. This is what we can sell. And Coach did such an unbelievable job in sort of galvanizing the community. We started to get support. Our administration began to support because they saw the success. And I think Coach became a guy that people looked at and said, wow, he seems like guys are having fun, giving a lot of freedom offensively, great location. And then I think the transfer thing, you know, we got very lucky. We win the league and then we lose Shane to the draft and like six seniors. And then we got Angel Rodriguez and Sheldon McClellan to sit out. And so the next group was just okay. We had an okay year, great group of guys, but we knew we had Angel and Shane, two all conference players sitting out and trying to develop them in the offseason. I mean, in the redshirt year.
You also get a chance in practice. Most guys who transfer, right? They weren't the go-to scorer, right? They weren't playing enough wherever they were. That's why they transferred. You know, some get in trouble, grades, some get homesick. And of course, some transfer up. Even the transfer up, I think it helps because you assimilate to the speed and athleticism. But more than anything, like every redshirt we ever had in practice, I've ever seen in practice, the coach tells them, like, you use every one of these practices to try and, you know, try and be a killer. Go get buckets. It helps the level of your practice, right?
Yes.
But it also helps that guy kind of, because what happens oftentimes is you lose your confidence.
Yes.
You know, you just do. You go to a place and you think you're really good and then you don't play. And most of the time it's your own fault you're not playing. I'm not omitting that. But whatever it is, you lose your confidence. And that year is needed to assimilate to the school, to the program, added strength, development, but also regain your confidence. I think it's one of those, I had a coach tell me they call it the Billis rule, right? This, you can transfer what you want, not sit out, that somehow it's a bad thing. I think we're totally missing the boat on that part. The portal is rough, but I think that having a guy sit out and maintain that year, I think Coach did some push for that. I don't know where the pushback would be. It feels like more in the media than anything else. You know, but, well, if a coach leaves and a coach and player are not equal, it's not the same thing.
Yeah. And I think there's a question of what's right. And I don't know what's right. I think the coach leave thing is funny because I just signed the contract. Like there's some financial repercussions if I just decided to walk away today. Right. Right? But like,
right. You have to do a buyout, yeah, right? Whereas yeah. A player doesn't have to do a buyout,
right.
And now they don't have to sit out. That doesn't make any sense.
But on the other hand, yeah, there are some benefits to sitting out. And I'm most concerned with graduation. I feel like, you know, the 5 years, all our guys, it was just, they graduated, I mean, which is the ultimate goal here.
Right? Who's the best? Give me the best story of a guy who, when you first recruited him or he first got there, you're like, oof, yikes. And then 4 or 5 years later, he walks. And
Jaquan Newton, who was a really good player from Philly, all-time leading scorer in the Philadelphia Catholic League. I love him. You know, Coach Larnaga, I mean, it makes you almost tear up when you talk about it, but his mom came on his official visit and she was a great lady. And she, you know, Jaquan was from Philly, had a little bit of a tough background, and he was a great kid. And his mom basically grabbed Mrs. Larnaga and Coach Larnaga and said, like, hey, I'm not going to be here. And like, no, I know, like you're going to be in Philly. She says, no, I have cancer. You know, I'm probably not going to be here. And you need, you know, you need, you know, if I send Jaquan here, you're going to have to take care of him. And Jaquan's mom passed away, I think right before the state championship game. And he went to practice, he played in the game, then won the state championship. And he came to Miami and he scored about 1,200 points. We won like 100 games in the time he was here. He was a great, great player for us. And yet, you know, like Jaquan hated school. I'm not going to, in fact, it's funny. He texted me the other day when we got the job and said, "Hey, I'm coming on your staff." I said, "Yeah, you're going to be in charge of making sure everybody goes to class." And, you know, he was laughing, but, you know, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house when we took pictures with him with his cap and gown from, you know, top 50 school in the country, you know, the day of graduation, you know, so there's a lot of stories like that. And you know, that's what Coach is so good at. I mean, he's just, you know, if I could be that way for guys, I that would be the success, right? More than wins and losses, you know.
One thing that people should know about Jim Larrañaga that's allowed him to be this successful for this amount of time in the sport, basketball is.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, Doug, he's got seven. I mean, he should be in the Hall of Fame. He got 700. He's going to have 700 wins plus when this is all over, whenever that is. And he's done it at Bowling Green, George Mason, and Miami. Let's think about that. He's gone to, you know, the Final Four, round of 32, two Sweet 16s, Elite Eight, you know, just incredible. There's nobody that loves basketball more than Jim Larrañaga. He was a great player. He wakes up every day. He has no hobbies. He likes going to movies. That's about it. He's a basketball guy. He watches every game. Obviously, his son's an assistant in the NBA, watches like the NBA games. He watches college games. He just has an incredible thirst for knowledge, even at his age, about, you know, about the game. And there's just nobody that is more of a basketball guy, lifer, than he. And his ability to view the game from the perspective, probably like you have, like, as a really good player, as somebody who is a good player, like that's how he views the game. So I think it's very easy for guys to play for him. If you're a really good player, Jim Larrañaga is like the guy you want to play for, because he's viewing it from the lens of the really good player. You know, he left Providence, he's like top five in every category, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's just his passion is unmatched for basketball.
This is not your first head coaching interview. Your first time you got close.
Yeah.
If a lot of assistant coaches listen to this, if you were, now that you've accomplished success, you've got the first head coaching job.
Right.
What would your advice be going into an interview, whether it's Zoom call or in person?
Yeah. And I'm the wrong guy, right? Because like I think being yourself. And it, for me, it was the only way I could do it. You know, I'm much more of a conversationalist, I guess, like I'm not scripted. I'm probably not like as, I don't know. I didn't come in there with the whole portfolio.
Polished?
No, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Polished is.
Yeah, the portfolio, you're right, because I did that once and I walked away going, that wasn't me. Right. Whereas me is this.
Yeah. I mean, like I can pretty much, I can pretty much sit in a room with almost anybody. And I've got friends in all walks of life. And I think that people know that about me, but, if I go in there and try to, script something, that's not going to be as good. And, I always felt like if you were yourself, they were either going to like you or they didn't like you. And that was that. You know, I was never trying to fool anybody or trick anybody, you know, into hiring me. So it was like, it's not arrogant. It's just, I'm not good at not being me. So I just didn't try, you know. I don't know that that's good advice, by the way. I mean.
No, I actually think it's fantastic advice.
Yeah.
Because so oftentimes people want to know, like, what's the secret? And, you know, my thing was, whenever I've interviewed, I understand there's always going to be fighting the Gavin coach. So you try and present to them like, okay, well, here's how it would look and here's how it would feel. But it has to, I'm just, you know, it's like it loses who I am and what I am as a communicator when It's like you said, like you can sit in a room with anybody and talk with anybody and find some sort of common ground and an ability to have a conversation and relate it to why they should be kind of in on you. Are your parents still alive?
Yes. Both still alive. Yeah.
You got the job.
Yeah.
Dad, mom, I remember your first job.
Yeah. Yeah. They were excited.
Was a no pay job.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what are they? I mean, like, look, you've done other things that I'm sure they're excited for.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is 20 years.
Yeah. Everybody's excited.
What was the conversation like?
Are you sure this is what you want? You know, that my parents are like, not like, you know, they're the opposite of the current day basketball parents. You know, they're like not in the stands telling me what to do, whatever. Like, hey, you know, you got a pretty good at Miami. You sure it's just what you want? And yeah, okay, all right, good. Well, that's good. You know, my parents are pretty low key, and they won't be coaching me from the stands. I can promise you that.
How do you approach the portal? What's your portal plan? Yeah. Like, you're not talking about individual players, but it's a tricky kind of new world.
Yeah.
What's your plan and thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think without giving out too many state secrets, I mean, I think there's some analytics behind how you evaluate some guys. I think what I do find, Doug, is what works for me and probably works for most coaches, going back to seriousness of approach, right, is like an older guy who's serious is that guy's probably a little bit more fun to coach at times, right? So I think
sometimes though, but look, sometimes you get you, it's like you sometimes it's like you have a VCR that somebody else programmed, right? Now you have like five VCRs that improved the program. Now at least they play college basketball,
right?
And so they understand a lot of the stuff. But there's also, you know, we all have different ways of practicing and different habits. I know one, you know, there are some programs that only play zone. You got to teach a guy man to man.
Yeah, yeah.
Some programs that
I think,
you know, so there's lots of different stuff.
Yeah. Some level of continuity within your program while making the portal work for you and not against you, I think is so important. And yeah, I think to your point, like, we've been lucky enough where we have so many good ones, you know, this year, the Charlie Moore, Cam McGusty, Jordan Miller, like, give me those guys every day because they were just such great guys and worked their butts off. And I'm hopeful that, you know, some combination of evaluating the character, the statistics, the situation and all that.
But how do you evaluate the character when you have such a short period of time, right? Like it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, you do a very deep dive of intel, almost like the NBA would evaluate, you know. In fact, there are times with some of we had a number of guys from the Big 12 where I'm calling NBA scouts about them and saying, okay, what did you see? I remember when we recruited Sheldon McClellan, who was a great player, wound up in the NBA, got hurt, but probably would be in the NBA today if he didn't tear his Achilles.
He's in Texas, right?
Yeah, he was a great player. So talented.
He's in Texas.
Yeah, yeah. I got like 2,000 points in college on 9 shots a game, you know, and it was just a really good player. And was with the Wizards, played a year, and then the second year got hurt in training camp, tore his Achilles. And so, but I remember having a sit down with him after we got him. We decided we're taking him. Thank God we took him. I said, hey, I talked to some people, and I'm not going to tell you who, but like, your body language is terrible. And he's like, what? Do they look at that? Yeah. Well, here's the report from this team X. Like, you know, we got to fix this if you think you want to play in the NBA and all that. So, I think just the amount of quick intel. And I know people say, yeah, it seems like not a lot of time, but if you've been in the business long enough, you know who to trust. You can, you know, one of the things is talking to opposing coaches, right? Like, hey, Doug, like, you played against this guy twice. What do you think? Oh, man, you know. You should take them, that type of thing.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. It's
if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant. Just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Now you are putting together staff. Yeah. What's that process like for you? How'd you go about putting together staff?
I'm working on it now. Yeah. I mean, I think you build it like a team, right? Like you get one guy and then that, okay, we have this. Now we got to compliment him with somebody else and compliment the next guy, you know, and things like that. So yeah, I don't think it's, at least for me, it wasn't like, hey, I got three guys waiting in the wings. They're all showing up on the first day. Obviously, like recruiting in some ways, because the guys that you want, you know, they probably have good jobs. And so you're trying to convince them to come with you. The good thing is, you know, probably similar to LA, there's a million basketball people from DC that want to come home or, you know, be around here. So not that the whole staff will be that from there here, but it's obviously a desirable place because of the, you know, the recruiting base and the location.
So you didn't have like a defined list of guys?
No, you have guys. Yeah, you have guys and you talk to them, but you're trying to build the best staff for, you know, GW. It might not be the best staff for somewhere else, you know?
Is there anything like Sean Miller didn't sub? His assistants always sub.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah.
That seems nuts to me, right?
I think he used to write down, I mean, hey, this guy needs to play 27 minutes. This guy's going to play 31 minutes. This guy's going to play 12 minutes and give it to Pasternak or whoever was with him. And they would sub. Coach L would say, subbing is the hardest thing for the head coach, right? Because you're trying to, especially in the two half game, like the four quarters, right? Probably makes it a little bit easier in terms of, hey, when you're going with guys and things like that. But because we've got these halves, it's sort of interesting to think through that, you know.
What do you think?
I think it's probably good. I think the closer we get to the FIBA game, you know, is probably a good thing.
You know what I really, you know, the people I really like, it's on the offensive rebound, the reset. It's awesome. When I coach it, you don't have time to come out and reset or anything like that. So you coach it to, and that's the best time to hit a dagger three. Yes. You get offensive rebound. The whole, you know, the defense is sunk in. You kick out, you hit a three. It just speeds it up. That's a rule I think that they need to. And the other one I like is the do away with offensive basket interference.
Right.
You get guys competing at the hoop. I'm okay with that. Offensive, defensive basket interference. On the Silver, I don't
agreed. Care. Agreed. Yeah. I think the other one too is, the advance. You know, if we've won a game because somebody threw it the length of the court and we tipped it or guy missed a crazy shot or whatever, then I like not advancing, you know, but like, obviously the advance makes it a little bit more exciting at the end of the game.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I kind of like it the way it is, but I'm willing to, I agree with you. It's, there's so many fun ATOs you can run. There's so many more things that seem possible. But you're also like giving a free pass to half the court, you know,
That one's hard.
But the other side to it is, and I know this because my brother spent the last few years on the women's side, coaches pocket those timeouts because they know they could, because they want to save them for advancing. So sometimes it does actually speed up the game organically. And that guys are, you know, they're, hey, or women, whatever, are thinking about those last couple timeouts. Whereas in the NBA, you have just so many timeouts, it doesn't really matter. I don't even know.
It seems
like they got 15 timeouts.
They have no under out of bounds plays. Like all their, you know, like, correct. You know, it's all side out.
What about, so how do you want to coach? Like, what are the things that you want to do? You've been waiting this whole time. They like, I got my own team. I've been sitting there the whole time. Again, you're not giving away trade secrets, but a couple things that you want to do that are unique to George Washington.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think what we've done at Miami, I feel like, you know, coaches led and I've had a big impact. So I'm not going to, you know, I don't think I'm going to change like so drastically. I think a lot of the things that we've been able to implement throughout the years and we've evolved towards, you know, maybe what you did 10 years ago. You feel like, you know what? I found a better way. And so, yeah, I don't think there's anything so unique to what I would want to do. I just think, as we talked about the other day, like, I think you got to eliminate losing before you can start to think about winning. Right. And so, you know, trying to be in a situation where you do things that are, you know, playing winning back. I talked to Jeff Van Gundy the other day about this a little bit. And I thought he had a great, he's like, hey, as the head coach, like, you can't worry about the other teams. You can't worry about, you know, a lot of things. But you do have to worry. Your job is to make sure your team is playing winning basketball. Doesn't mean you win, but you're playing winning basketball. What does that mean? You know, taking care of the ball and playing hard and defending your position and, a belief that you should play sharing the ball and playing for each other and those things. And I know they're big picture things, but it's like, a lot of teams don't do that. That's why they lose.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. There's little things, but I'm just more interested in how you implement. Is there a special way to implement? Is there a special way to follow it up? Is there a thought of, hey, I've always wanted to do this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's a lot of skill acquisition science that's probably like in the last, probably only 30, 40 years that have sort of come up. And the one thing I've always thought about, and now there's a lot of talk about this, I'm sure you've paid attention to some of this stuff. Like, there are things that we do in coaching that a lot of people do. And the only reason why we do them is like, because in 1950, like Coach Iba did them, or, you know, whatever, whatever year he coached, right? Like, we do this and just because coaches do them, right? And then you start to read the science and the acquisition piece and you're saying like, I don't know. That seems very different than what we do. And so I think as a coach, maybe in today's day and age, you're trying to use some of this research and some of this science that has now become more prevalent and say, how do we craft stuff?
Give me one thing that drives you crazy that we have always done that we also need to evolve out.
Oh man. I mean, now I'm going to get myself in trouble.
No, you're not.
No. Okay, I hate dummy offense.
5-0.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say we wouldn't do dummy offense, but I'm not a big dummy offense guy. It's like it's a puzzle.
Always teaching 5-on-5. Always teaching 5-on-5.
Well, not always 5-on-5, but you have to like it, this is a puzzle. This is perception action, right? You've got to see the bodies out there to evaluate your decision making, and in 5-on-0, right? It's just not how the game is played. So, you know, you can use 5-on-0 to, you know, install something or, you know, maybe the day of the game to just kind of move with some pace and get the ball. But like, if you think, again, I've never coached. Well, I've coached two games. I'm 1-1. So, but there's great coaches that probably do 5-on-0 all the time. But I think pattern recognition, you have to have the whole pattern for that to happen. Right. So I've always found that playing 5-on-5 and against defense is how guys are able to perceive and make better decisions.
It's interesting. A guy who I actually butted heads with as a coach is named Sharon Drucker. He coaches, I think he coaches the women's Israeli women's national team. He's my coach in Maccabi Rotterdam. Right. But I really enjoyed his practices, and I enjoyed his practices because they're all 5-on-5. That's it. You know, we played like it was 5-on-5 every day, and everything that he put in, he put in.
The game's played 5-on-5. The game's played 5-on-5. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think you make a great play. It's way more fun to play. And then the question is, the older the coach, the more they stop it. How much do you stop it and correct? But you can also, I love that when you're putting something in, you can show them not just the what, but also the why. You know, so they don't have to conceptualize the why; they can see the why. Is that a fair estimation of what you're saying?
Yeah, I think the best example I can give is I read this in a book by Doug Lemoff, who's a author who's written a bunch of teaching books, and I'm sure people listen to this podcast have maybe heard of him or listened to him or read his book about coaching. But they brought these chess masters in, like 10 chess masters, and they had 10 chess boards out there. And then they asked them to look at the chess boards for like 10 minutes and they left the room. And then they brought in like novice chess players and they asked them to look at the chess boards and then they asked them to leave the room. And then they came back and said, hey, can you recreate the boards? So of course, who did a better job, right? The chess masters. And so people would say, oh, wow, they got photographic memories and all that. Well, hold on a second. What the boards were aligned as were great chess matches in history. Like what those pieces look like in that particular great chess match in history, right? Then they came in and they did it again. And they did randomly selected pieces all over the boards. They brought the masters in, they left. They brought the novice in, they left. They came back, who did it better? Nobody did it better. There was no distinction.
Yeah. Why? Famous, right? Yeah.
Because the masters have this long-term memory base that they can draw from, pattern recognition, things that they've seen. But once you randomized it, nobody knew the difference. It's the reason why you can watch plays that you've seen and you know what they are. And somebody who kind of knows basketball, he can't name what they are. So it's the same thing with the players. If we've only got half the chessboard out there, will they encode it in their long-term memory long enough? You know, I don't know. Probably not.
That's okay. So I like it. So dummy offense. All right, give me one more. One more that you're like,
Oh my goodness.
Are you going to run lines? Thing. Are you going to, like, I've seen like conditioning at Eason, with the exception of Christmas break, we never conditioned. Our practice, if you're going hard enough in practice, you don't need it.
Yeah,
some coaches are conditioning nuts. You know, some guys, John McLeod used to sprint to get water. He'd 4 quarters of practice. And at the end of one quarter, you had to run, and then you get water. And then you do it at the end of all four quarters.
No, yeah. Well, one interesting one, again, I don't know if I would do it enough, but as you're bringing up all these sort of, idiosyncrasies of coaching, like one time we used to do this a little bit, and somebody had sort of suggested it made sense. Like, should you have halftime of practice?
Yeah.
You have halftime in the games.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just have halftime of practice? Like, hey, if we're going to practice for an hour and a half, like at 45 minutes, like, hey, we're going to go sit down somewhere and watch film or talk or whatever. The problem is, again, you get into the logistics. It's all good in theory, right? But as a player, now I got to get you loose again. Right. So we're not practicing for an hour and 45 minutes. If we sit down, we got to probably get up and do something to get loose again.
Two line layups is one that could go away. If I never did two line layups again.
Oh, two line laps, right.
Right. And I've actually done those in practice at Notre Dame. We used to do that to get pumped up. All right, let's go. Let's throw down.
Three man weave. I mean, when do you do that? Throwing it to the wing and then ran on behind the guy. Like, I don't know. Three on two to the 2-on-1. How many times in your career have you come down and it's been three guys and then two guys right in the middle of the lane? And then you threw it, and then somebody went there and threw it right back. Like, I don't know. I'm just asking questions. I don't have the answers. You were a great player.
You want to recreate something that you're gonna see. I do like 3-on-3-on-3. I love that, and 4-on-4-on-4. I think those are always fun and competitive. Always fun and competitive. Okay, what about scheduling? Your idea of scheduling You got expectations, the league, how the league schedules. You have your budget. I guess it's all part of your new job. What's your thoughts on how you want your schedule?
Well, you know, the A10 has a scheduling policy that I need to learn a little bit. In fact, I'm on a call today about it. So I need to wrap my brain around it a little bit. I think for everybody in scheduling these days, you know, we got two large bids at George Mason, and which is, you know, not that easy to do, right? And Eric Conkle, you can ask him about it. He did our schedule at George Mason, and you know, we were obviously trying to figure out the RPI and how to get our best RPI. And some of it is your league, right? The CAA. Our last year there, when we won 15 straight games in the regular season and won the league, but you know, Old Dominion got in and lost to Butler at the buzzer. We beat Villanova, and VCU, who finished fourth, went to the Final Four. So like the league was great. But now I think for everybody trying to understand the net and sort of those predictive metrics and how they play into, you know, getting in the tournament or having a good net or having a good RPI, is I think everyone's sort of trying to learn that right now. So I can't speak intelligently on that piece because I think everybody's trying to think it through, you know.
Last thing, what do you want when I see your team play in, sure, I don't know, 7-8 months? What should I walk away from the gym? It's the Auerbach Center. I've been there a bunch, right? It's really, I mean, historic in that sense.
Yeah, it's the Smith Center. It's Smith Center, but they have the red chair for red, which is awesome. You know, there's the red chair in the stands. Yeah,
that's very cool. So, what should I walk away year one saying about your program?
Yeah, I would just say that we play really hard. I know it's just cliche. We defend and we play for each other. Take good shots.
All right. So yesterday was day one. You got on the court with the fellas. Day two is what?
A bunch of more administrative things, all the different things you have to do, and then also getting on the court again today. So that's the best part of the day. Everything else is like, you know, hectic, but when you're on the court, obviously you know, you enjoy it.
Everything else is the job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's honestly, everything else is what you get paid for. It's like they say this in morning radio, like you're not actually getting paid to do the show. You're getting paid to get up every day. Right. And you're not actually getting paid to coach. You're getting paid for all of the other stuff.
It's a great way to look at it. I agree.
Well, thanks for the insight on last night. I love the storytelling, and
I appreciate it.
You've been incredibly generous with your time. So thank you so much,
Doug. I appreciate it, brother. Thanks so much.
All right, there you go. Another All Ball in the books. Another really interesting guy getting a brand new job and getting a perspective that you didn't get anywhere else. Remember, listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to Pacific, on the iHeartRadio app, Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, or SiriusXM 217 or 203. In the meantime, remember, somebody you want on, somebody you find interesting, or a question you want to answer, feel free. Reach out on Twitter at Gottlieb Show, Instagram at Gottlieb Show, or the Doug Gottlieb Show fan page on Facebook. Thanks so much for listening. Remember to download, rate, write a review, and tell a friend. Don't be afraid to repeat the sucker or send it along to somebody, because Chris is awesome. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.